you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 156 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host, as usual. And today my guest is Kimberly Bennett. Kimberly runs a boutique trademark and business strategy law practice out of Atlanta that provides subscription and onboard flat fee virtual general counsel services to her clients in a geographically dispersed firm. So it's more than just being a virtual firm. She's providing services to clients spread across the country. And as you'll hear us discuss, she also does so using a subscription service, which I have to admit, I had never heard of. So it's really kind of an eye-opening discussion for me, at least. It may just be that, you know, I'm clueless, but that wouldn't be the first time to come to that conclusion. But anyway, she's also a technology whiz, which is why I was drawn to ask her to be on the program. We don't get into as much concerning the technology as I might otherwise do, so we're going to have her back again at some point to do that. But I think you're going to find this very interesting discussion about the challenges of a federally based practice. I mean, she's admitted in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, but she operates out of Atlanta. She lives in Atlanta. So it's just fascinating, if you ask me. So what interests me, I hope interests you, and I hope you enjoy discussing or listening to the discussion with Kimberly Bennett. Kimberly Bennett, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you.
Well, I'm delighted to have you here. I'm delighted to have you here, Kimberly. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, great. Okay, so my name is Kimberly Bennett. I run a trademark and business strategy law firm. I am based in Atlanta, but I run a New Jersey PA-based firm because that's where I'm barred. And really what I care about is driving the industry forward and changing some of our traditional law firm mindsets into more of a client-focused, happier lawyer practice and industry. And so I also help attorneys shift from billable hours to more flat fee or subscription-based model like my firm.
Well, you're a whole gaggle of contradictions here or differences. I mean, you're admitted in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, but you live in Atlanta.
Atlanta, yep.
Yeah. And you have this concept of making working with attorneys an enjoyable experience?
That's the goal, right? I mean, I think that should be our goal when we're selling anything. And so we happen to be in the business of selling legal services. So let's make it as enjoyable as you can, or at least, you know, client friendly as you can.
Exactly. So now, did you always have the entrepreneurial bent? Did you expect to be a solo practitioner when you came out of law school, or is that something you came upon a little further down the line?
Yeah, no. So I didn't have a traditional path into even into law school or post law school, but I don't believe I thought I would be an entrepreneur. I was still had very traditional law firm or traditional mindset about like work, right? Like, you know, you go to school, you get the education, you work hard, you go into a company, you grow in that company or that firm, and you reap the benefits of that, right? You buy the house, you do all those things.
American dream.
Yep, the American dream, exactly. So I was definitely that person in law school as well. But and I went straight to actually in-house after law school, but I didn't see myself being an entrepreneur when I was that young.
What flipped the switch for you?
The market flipped the switch.
As it did for a lot of us.
Yep. So I came out of law school in 2007. I was in law school for a while. And because I was in a joint degree program at the time, I left the joint degree program, but I still completed law school. And I came out in 07. And it was still okay in 07. I was in a company at the time and great experience there. And then 08 happened.
Yeah.
And I think for all of us that were working, or if you were coming out when 08 happened, that either meant opportunities were pulled, that meant, you know, whether that meant growth opportunities in your company or your firm, or, you know, unfortunately for a lot of lawyers, that meant offers were pulled. So yeah. I had a job, but opportunities for growth were changed. And so that was, I think, where the shift started happening.
And interestingly, that whole experience that I went through at the same time, because I was relatively the same time, a little bit predated you, but I saw so many of, particularly the younger attorneys who, having experienced that downturn in the market, their only opportunity to practice law and to kind of recoup their expenses was to try and start a firm on their own.
Yep.
Now, I had been a business owner before I went to law school, so I'd already made all the mistakes. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought. I found out there was a whole new bevy of mistakes to make as a law firm owner. But for some of these younger students, you know, they didn't have that background. And sadly, I mean, some of them hadn't even, you know, managed their own checkbook before.
Right.
Much less an IOLTA account. And so that was one of the reasons that I started this podcast, was to address that question. So you're kind of the perfect demographic for that. So mother necessity dictated that you take a look at being the entrepreneur and opening your practice. Now, were you already doing trademark and patent law at that time?
I was not. And so in 08, I didn't even transition to the solo life then either. But no, I started as actually in labor.
Okay.
So I started in labor and employment, specifically, you know, leaning more labor. So labor relations, dealing with unionized workforces and in a company that was heavily unionized. And so I did work in that area of the law. And so I stayed with the company for a while. And then in 2010 is when the transition actually happened. But yeah, I mean, it was an interesting time, but I did not start with trademark.
Okay. Well, what pulled you towards trademarks?
Well, and it was an intentional decision. So I didn't come out. So a lot of lessons learned when you go into the solo space. So I went into a firm already. The advantage of having a father that's a practicing attorney. Mm-hmm. So that was also helpful. But so he had a practice. So I went into that practice and it was almost like me taking over a practice, because he's always had like this side practice, and it's not something that he did full time, but it was something that he had. And so I was like, well, let me do it more full time and let me take over it and kind of scale it up. And there was a lot of lessons learned there, but I didn't start with trademark. I did kind of did, which was a general practice, and learned that I did not like that at all. Mm-hmm. But as I grew, I wanted to grow a firm that gave me flexibility. And that meant what practice areas made the most sense for me. And so as I learned over time, which I wish I learned a little bit earlier, was that to scale, you know, to narrow my focus and to pick a practice area that gave me that flexibility. And so that's how I eventually got to trademark law.
And what appealed to you about trademark? The aspect that it's federally based, and therefore you could scale it up on a national scale?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and also how I like working with clients. And so, you know, lessons learned throughout the process of being in the solo small space and losing money. So it was just having the national and the scalable practice, having the ability to work with the type of clients I wanted to work with, and seeing and helping more like in-house, which was what I learned, mm-hmm. right? And so it brought together some of these aspects of all of the things that I learned throughout my career. And so when I eventually made the move to trademark, it made trademark and business strategy truly, but that made the most sense because it brought in my in-house experience, it brought in my desire to scale a firm that was a national firm and give me the flexibility to, you know, grow a practice that is aligned with my goals, my dreams, my visions, and those are the clients that I'm working with.
Well, I have to admit my own ignorance here. I don't really kind of grasp the concept of a solo practice that has a national scope. So I guess trademarks, because it's a federally oriented activity and things like, immigration mm-hmm. could also possibly be a national in scope. What kinds of challenges does that by itself uniquely bring to the practice?
I think marketing is a challenge, right?
Well, I would have to think so.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. When you, small firms are local. And even as someone that is virtual, that's kind of where I started, where I thought about starting my firm. It's hard when you don't have that local focus. And so you have to be very strategic about how people learn about what you do, how you get your name out there, how you grow and scale. Marketing. I think marketing is by far, but I think that's also across the board because in our industry, we look at marketing as like a taboo. There's ethics rules around it and a lot of attorneys are afraid of it, but we're at a time where it's no longer an option not to. And so I think just spending some time adding some strategy to what you're doing is important. But for me, marketing, of course, is always something you have to work on.
It's such an albatross around attorneys' necks that other small business practitioners don't have.
Right.
The idea, and we've talked about this on the show many times, mm-hmm. for dozens of years, if not decades, attorneys were prohibited from advertising and marketing. And the whole idea of legal marketing was, hey, you do a good job performing a legal function, and word will get around.
Right.
And that's just not reasonable anymore. And particularly now, if you're talking about a practice like yours that is national in scope.
Right. And it's not reasonable also for the client, because the reality is, and something that I've learned along the way, is that clients just don't understand when they need legal services, right? They understand legal services in the fire state, right? Like when there's a big issue, when there's a problem, they need to solve the problem. But as someone that comes from in-house and, working with clients that are businesses, prevention is so much better. So when we rely on the older model, it's a very much a reactive model that assumes clients understand legal.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why, people have this negative connotation about going to an attorney, because it's usually associated with something that's gone horribly wrong in your life.
Right.
Like a divorce or a traffic accident or a criminal charge or something like that. So the marketing paradigm to address clients like that, as opposed to clients that you're looking for, is a complete 180-degree shift. Yours, as well as, for instance, my practice area, estate planning, mm-hmm. Is more of an educational process of getting the concept across as to why potential clients might need services such as yours.
Yep. And I think, we all need to educate our clients. So that's something that's very important to me. And I try to do that in a range of ways, whether that's like video, email, free downloadable items. So to provide that foundation, that education, that's not legal advice, but the education to say, okay, here's when I actually realize I might consider an attorney. So.
Right. So is that the form that your marketing most often takes, one of an educational nature, providing, as you said, written blog posts, video content, downloadable educational materials? Is that how your marketing typically takes shape?
Yeah, my marketing. So I do definitely video. I'm probably heavy video. I do free webinars. I do free live Q&A educational sessions. Excuse me. I do a monthly live show for even legal professionals as well. So I do a lot of video. In addition, then I have an email list, which I think is super important that every attorney needs to have, because it's just a valuable item in your business and you should be growing and scaling that. And so I have an email list that I send weekly emails to. The goal is to provide valuable information depending on what the needs are. And like you said, educating, right? Because I think proactive means that you don't want to wait for an issue. And so let me help you realize that maybe there's an issue and help you as you're going through that journey. So doing that is one of the ways, and I found it to be very useful. And then of course, like your social media posts and those things that get people just to know I'm even an attorney that's available for them at some point in time.
Today, I'd like to introduce a new sponsor to The Law Entrepreneur, and that's the folks at Jurisdiction. You started your law practice to ditch the firm life and be your own boss, but your practice is running you. The good news, being an attorney entrepreneur doesn't have to be this hard. Jesse and Megan, the lawpreneurs behind Jurisdiction, are working to build a new generation of solo practitioners who love being lawyers. This year, Jurisdiction is introducing a new program, Next Level Law Practice. Next Level Law Practice is a rigorous training program that provides the tools and business fundamentals for estate planning attorneys to start and grow a profitable and streamlined legal business. Next Level Law Practice gives you access to videos, worksheets, templates, one-on-one coaching, and live group sessions that allow you to ask questions and learn on your own schedule. To learn more about the program, visit thrivejd.com. That's thrivejd.com. They're even offering an exclusive coupon code for the Law Entrepreneur listeners. Just enter the code TLE150, that's like the Law Entrepreneur 150, for a $150 discount off your course registration. And welcome to the show, Jurisdiction. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the Mac CRM and case management tool I've been using for years to run my practice. If you want to take your practice further, you need to try Daylight. Daylight keeps track of every case detail and reminds you when you need to follow up so you can focus on what matters most. To be honest with you, I can't imagine running my practice without Daylight. So say hello to a stress-free workflow and visit marketcircle.com to try Daylight now. Remember to mention that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount off your first monthly subscription. One of the challenges I have is not to dive down the rabbit hole that really appeals to me, and to try and think in the larger scope and context of our listening audience. However, when you run all those things together that you just talked about in terms of your approach to marketing, what I hear is, man, she must use a lot of tools to get that done.
I do.
And so I start kind of salivating in the mouth, like, I wonder what she's using to do all that. Is there one platform, or has she got a whole bunch of them that she strings together and uses in some kind of unique way? So, why don't you indulge me just a little bit and tell me what the nature of your tool suite or your tool chest is?
Well, sure. Well, I'll say, tools are very important. And when I first went out in 2010, I picked up a tool immediately, which was practice management. I could not understand how attorneys did anything but like run their firm without it. So I've always had tools from day one. And I've scaled up my tools. I test a ton of tools. I love tools, maybe a little bit too much. Yep. But so for marketing, people always ask me, Kim, how do you get all that content out? Well, I need to have a plan. I have like a strategy behind it. And so like with social media, I have, I use a social media tool that will allow me to send out consistently. So I use CopeSchedule. Okay. It's a tool that allows you to post to all of the platforms. But I think the bonus part of this tool, which if you use CoSchedule, if you're not using it, you're not maximizing it. It's called Requeue, which other tools have this. Like there's like tools called like SmarterQueue. There's some other ones out there. But this allows you to like evergreen post. So part of a social media strategy should be to post valuable content, but you're not going to create 365 days worth of content. That's just not realistic. So you want to create great content that you continuously use, because we know if we know anything about social media, people don't see most of the things you post. So you should post it multiple times. And so it's just a great way to get content out there, get good content out there to engage people. So that's one of the big ways I get a lot of content out, is by using that tool. And then I have other tools that I use to kind of do my other forms of marketing.
Yeah, I use a product called Social Jukebox.
Yes,
which allows to put some of that social media content and have it scheduled for repetition over a course of time, so it becomes evergreen. And so what you've done is this Requeue is kind of a similar aspect, but it's built into your original social media posting tool. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, was that Co-host Schedule?
CoSchedule. So like CoSchedule.
Yeah. And there are others that you know, Hootsuite and yep. Ask Edgar and those kinds of things do the similar kind of thing. So it's interesting to see we've got a couple of different options here that you're using. So in the process of doing all that, I'm interested. One of the big challenges that small firms have is you know, managing the money,
right?
You know, getting paid, and you know, it's always a challenge. You know, people ask, well, what do you use for billing software? And does it integrate with your case management tool? And you said back when we first started here that yours was a subscription based
yes.
law firm. That's a term I have to admit that is new to me. Can you share with us what that means and how does that affect, you know, billing and whatever tools you might use to accomplish that?
Right. So subscription-based law firm means that clients pay us a monthly set fee, or at least, let me say, a monthly base fee. So the fee could go up depending if they need to add work here and there, but it's a monthly base fee that they pay us and to do a certain set of work, right? Certain things. And it's similar work every single month that's meant to help grow and scale the business. And so I took the approach that as in-house counsel, what I learned is, you know, being in-house and working in labor in-house, that, you know, proactive support is much better. Proactive legal support means helping them drive revenue, right? Or making better revenue decisions using our legal expertise to help them guide them. And so what we do is they pay us monthly. We do work monthly. They pay us the next month. We keep on doing the work. And so where the money is less of an issue about creating value for the client, streamlining your processes and creating efficiencies in how you deliver services, and really leaning into what the role of an attorney is, which is an advisor. It's not document drafter. It's not, you know, someone that's going to track every single time a client calls you. It's really focusing on building out a relationship and helping to advise clients on the right next step, right? Giving them the information so that they can make a decision. And so I built a model that's really, really focused on the client. So that's really how we do it.
That's really interesting because it sounds as if in doing so, you become a part of the client's team.
Yep, exactly.
And they obviously have to think of you that way. And it's just something paying you on a subscription basis is just part of the cost of what they do to provide whatever it is they're providing.
Exactly.
Do you use an automated tool to collect or to invoice those subscriptions, or is it an automatic billing setup, or how does that process work?
Yeah, so you want to definitely streamline how you collect your money because I think for attorneys, collecting money is always a big deal. For me, I don't have accounts receivable. I'm paid every month. I don't chase money. And it's made it for a much better, happier practice for myself and for my clients. And so, yeah, they auto-build the first of every, well, they're actually not billed the first. They're built at different times. Some clients are on the first and some are throughout the month whenever sure. they started on the subscription. And it's kind of like, think of like how you pay Netflix, right? It comes out of your account every month. Are you thinking about it? No, it just comes out. You pay it and you access the services that Netflix provides. This is the exact same thing that we're doing. And so, yeah, I use LawPay. I also use a tool, but you know, you can do it through LawPay. You can do it through, I happen to use Clio as a practice management tool.
Okay.
So there's interesting ways you can set that up to do it as well. I think Practice Panther has some of those ways as well, you know, and some of the other tools. But sure. yeah, it's really about automating the process. So you're not focused on just always collecting. That's just happening in the background.
Ironically, I spoke to some folks from LawPay yesterday and helping them with something else and discovered, and I've been a LawPay client for many years now. I didn't know that LawPay had the capacity of doing reoccurring payments.
Yep, they do.
So
absolutely.
That's what you've been using. You had reoccurring payments. Every client has a reoccurring payment that they set up ahead of time and bada bing, bada boom, you're done.
Yep, exactly. You just have a retainer agreement that makes it, you know, that spells out how it happens.
Sure.
And it's done.
It has to be really helpful for you to understand your cash flow basis because really it's almost painfully obvious what your monthly income is going to be.
Exactly. That's the idea. See, here's the thing. We are growing a business. We just happen to be selling legal services. Yeah. And I think it's really important for attorneys to shift towards that. And I think as we've moved away from saying, you know, where we were talking earlier, where attorneys weren't allowed to market, to now moving towards allowing it, and then now moving to where it needs to go, which is we're a business, period, right? Clients are much smarter. We have access to information. We should be helping them find more of it and then selecting the person to help guide you. So we all can find information on how to market, but like maybe you want to hire a marketing professional because they can get it done faster and better than we could if we did it on our own. And so I really firmly believe that if attorneys move towards a predictable model where you can forecast, where you operate like a business, where you're not billing by the hour, and instead you're focusing on efficiencies and client relationships, you will have a better practice. And that's what I found in my practice.
Are there some practice areas that you feel better lend themselves to this model or this approach? And are there some that by definition aren't candidates for this type of a system?
Well, so it depends on how you look at legal services. And I think that's a shift that attorneys are starting to make, and some are still having that difficult shift. So here's the fact. We know clients like products. They like legal products, and large companies have proven that model. And I'll say I'm not an attorney that doesn't, you know, that hates those large companies. I think they have provided that baseline knowledge to show us clients like or customers like legal products. So it's available in every practice area. It's just how do you serve the client? Like, what are you doing for them that provides you that recurring revenue, whether that's through a legal product or that's through legal services, right? Like actually what our traditional attorney-client relationship looks like. So I think you can do it in everything. And the way I do it in my business right now is providing services, but you could do it also as a product as well.
The legal environment is more competitive than ever, and small law firms are feeling the pinch. With over 1.3 million attorneys in the United States and counting, it can be hard to stand out from the crowd. And that's why Spotlight Branding helps lawyers become unforgettable. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of internet marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel, and they don't ask them to burn thousands of dollars on speculative pay-per-click advertising. Instead, they're focused on the fundamentals of legal marketing that have worked for dozens upon dozens of years. They use the internet to build a premium brand for solo and small firm lawyers like myself, and they put systems in place to create top-of-mind awareness, allowing their clients to maximize the referrals and repeat business. It's the smart way to grow your law firm. To get more information, visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, and receive a special gift from our friends there at Spotlight Branding. Spotlight Branding, helping lawyers become unforgettable. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/law entrepreneur. That sounds like it's a challenge. What are some of the other challenges that you face? You mentioned marketing. It doesn't sound like the billing practice is much of a challenge for you. You've got that nailed down. How about client communications? How are you creating that efficiency of scale and providing that customer service that is inherent in your practice?
Right. So I'll say my practice at its core is a process-driven, tech-driven practice. And I think without a process, it's hard to scale anything. And so it's really important as people are building out modern law firms is to really hone into your process. Like, how do you get things done? And once you understand how you get it done more efficiently, typically with technology, right? So for me, client communication happens in a range of ways, whether with clients and sending back a messaging, I really try to keep my clients on secure messaging. there's a lot of improvements I would love to see with secure messaging. So hint, hint to the tools that I use, please improve it.
Right.
But yeah, I use secure messaging because it keeps a little bit cleaner. It's it gives me notification on my phone when a client has sent me back a message so I can, you know, respond to it faster. That's one of the ways I do it. Of course, there's still email marketing that I do to clients as well to keep them informed, but really trying to find ways to streamline and to be ahead of the communication. One of the other things I think that I found that attorneys, I would love to see people shift from is being afraid of client communication. I think client communication is the best thing that we can get as attorneys, right? Because if you spend a lot of money on marketing, if you spend money on marketing, you know it's a lot of money that you're spending, right? It takes a lot to bring someone into your door. So the best type of marketing is from the people that are you're already serving or the people that you've previously served. So take all those calls. It's an opportunity to learn more. And so that's how I view even client communication. It's just schedule a call. I have it automated. They have links that they can schedule on demand when they want to. And it frees up me from having to go back and forth with emails. So there's a lot of processes in place that I have to make sure clients feel we're available and that we keep the communications happening.
Yeah, I had a mentor one time, rest his soul, who's no longer with us, who said to me, if you want to distinguish yourself from 90% of the legal market, return the phone call.
Right.
Or answer the phone was actually what he said. Because
and I'll take it a step further. Yeah. I would say stop charging for the calls.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's an interesting point because I also do some family law where we do typically bill on an hourly basis. Not always, but typically. And I see so many people that say, you're going to nickel and dime me by charging me for emails and phone calls that you make to me. And I've always taken the approach, no, I'm not going to do that. No, I'm going to charge you for phone calls and emails that I make on behalf of you to other attorneys and stuff. But client communication, I think that's just part of the relationship that they've contracted for.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I think I agree with that.
Yeah.
And I think it's also, there's so many opportunities in client communication for you to learn as a firm. And so why would you want to limit it?
Yeah. You have to be in touch with your client base to understand the problems that they're having and so that you can fashion the solutions that you want to offer to meet those problems.
Absolutely.
I also spoke to an attorney recently who was decrying the idea of allowing your clients to text you, to use text messaging. And because they felt that A, it wasn't secure enough for them, and B, it didn't provide a record of that communication that could easily be maintained as a file for the client. And I just thought that was a little bit short-sighted.
I would agree.
I don't know what your views are.
I agree. I mean, there are tools out there that you can actually manage that. So why not add a tool if that's the problem you're trying to solve, which is like, you know, managing it and also tracking it, well, add a tool to do it, right? Because here's the thing, if we want to build client-focused, client-centered practices, which we all should want to do that, then let's grab a tool that helps us do that and let's really design it for where clients are. Most of our clients, I mean, at this point, most of our clients are going to be communicating with us from a mobile device. And so we want to have a tool that's mobile friendly. We want to have communication that's mobile friendly. And so it's still, you know, a step for us in legal. I get that. And not everything always works that way. But if texting is a way most of your clients like to communicate, embrace it and create a process around it.
Exactly. You know, and part of my clientele are the younger millennials. And if they can't text, they can't communicate with you.
Right.
In large part. And just to put a quiet plug or not so quiet plug in for one of our sponsors, Ruby Receptionists. Call Ruby or Ruby Receptionists have now added that secure texting feature as part of the platform that they offer. So you can text through their application on your mobile device and it protects your cell phone number and provides a historical record of those texts. So they've solved that problem within their platform. So I use that all the time. And that was the genesis of the conversation I was having with this attorney about whether or not it made sense to provide the opportunity for your clients to text you.
Yeah. I let them, but of course, for me, secure messaging just eliminates that too, because they could just send me a message through the secure messaging portal.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, you've got all these tools working for you, and you're focused on building processes and systems that allow you to scale your practice. You know, it sounds like you have an awful lot to offer in terms of mentoring others. I do know you also provide a coaching service in addition to running your practice.
I do that via the Modern Legal Collective. And so that's my coaching program for lawyers who are looking to move away from the billable hour and build a scalable law firm with subscription legal services. So whether that's, you know, doing it as a service or doing it as a product, that is also what I do. So I offer like one-time strategy sessions, as well as a mastermind. And the mastermind is geared at female attorneys helping to grow and scale, but the strategy sessions are open to everybody. So, okay.
All right. So you kind of service a couple of different ideal clients in that respect.
Yes. And that, I mean, for my overall, it's really like female attorneys looking to grow and scale subscription-based law firms. Of course, male attorneys sometimes ask me for help and support. So if you need some help and support, let's schedule a strategy session and help you take the next step. But my core ideal client is the female attorney growing and scaling an established firm.
Let's tell them right here, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you in that regard?
Sure. So if you're interested in getting some support on growing this type of practice model, then I invite you to go to themodernlegalcollective.com and you can select either the profit plan as for a strategy session or go ahead and apply for my mastermind there. Or you can, of course, reach me via email at hello@modernlegalcollective.com.
Perfect. Well, Kimberly, I could spend the rest of the afternoon chatting with you, but I know you got real work to do, so I'm going to let you go. But I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today. And can I invite you to come back to talk more technology and growth?
Yeah, I would love to. I love talking tech.
All right. Sounds great. Kimberly, thanks ever so much for being a guest today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that will do it for today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors for making this show possible, the good folks at Call Ruby Receptionists, Spotlight Branding, Market Circle, the makers of Daylight, and our newest sponsor, Jurisdiction, the providers of the Next Level Law Practice Program. So take a moment to visit our show notes and hop on over to their websites for special discounts and savings and other free stuff that you can get, and just support them because they make this podcast possible day in and day out. Also, if you got a couple minutes, pop on over to our own website, thelawentrepreneur.com. We have a couple little articles there. You can also listen to the podcast itself there if you choose to. And sign up for our newsletter or our mailing list. And we don't do a lot. You know, you're not going to bombard you with emails every week. And I do plan on doing a few more this year, but we'd love to have you join our community. And in that sense, you can also go on to our Facebook page. You can find us just by searching on The Law Entrepreneur. You can find out what we got going on a daily basis, sometimes hourly, on the Facebook page. So I'd love to have you join us there. And if you have the time, last but not least, go on over to iTunes, search on The Law Entrepreneur. And if it's something that you believe in and feel strongly about, we'd love for you to leave an honest 5-star review, as well as comments about what you like and dislike about the show, because it does mean a lot to us that you are our community, our listeners, and I want to thank you for making this all possible. So we'll see you next time on The Law Entrepreneur.